Chapter 9, She Needs Enough Money to Live Comfortably, Financial Support. Sandra had been raised comfortably in an upper-middle-class American home. She attended the state university, where she majored in art, history, and George. They married while still in school. George finished his undergraduate work and also earned a master's degree in fine arts. But once he was out of school, he could find no work that utilized his training. He tried to move into the world of commercial art, but the competition was fierce. 2 years after graduation, he had still not found full-time work. He kept very busy with his painting and drawing, but his income was poor and unpredictable. During the first 6 years of their marriage, his jobs or assignments never lasted longer than 6 months. Sandra, consequently, found herself working full-time as a receptionist to help make ends meet. She wanted to have children, but their finances prevented it. They lived in a modest apartment. Little money was on hand for extras, and they could afford only one inexpensive car. Sandra knew several young executives at work who had started to climb the ladder of success. They all looked terrific to Sandra, dressed handsomely in $1,000 suits. Some were already earning income several times higher than George's would ever be. Alan was also attracted to her. On several occasions, she helped him make sales by her skillful handling of customers in the telephone and in the lobby. That had motivated him to work more closely with her, and from time to time, he would stop by her desk just to talk. The more he got to know her, the more he liked her. During those conversations, Alan often heard Sandra say things like, "I feel so bad for George. He's so good at what he does, but it's hard for an artist to find a steady job." One day, she broke down and started crying. "Sandra." His voice conveyed more compassion than alarm. "I don't think George will ever earn much," she sobbed. "We'll never have anything." "It's probably none of my business, but George has a good thing going," Alan suggested. "He can spend all day enjoying art while you're here supporting him. If he hadn't married you, he'd be working like the rest of us. I don't think he's being fair to you." That started Sandra thinking. "George is using me," she thought. "He's doing what he enjoys at my expense. If he cared about me, he'd give up his artwork for a profession that could support us." She became increasingly resentful about how trapped she was. As time went by, Sandra and Alan became good friends. She found herself sitting and talking sales with Alan, first at her desk at odd moments, then at coffee breaks, and finally at lunch almost every day. He reminded Sandra of her father, who was also a businessman, ambitious and prosperous. The more she came to know Alan, the more she felt it had been a mistake to have married George. By predictable stages, the friendship grew into an affair. The weekend George had gone out of town to interview for a part-time teaching position, Alan invited Sandra to join him on his boat. That was the first of many times they made love. The job didn't come through, but it started her thinking that someday she might be forced to move away from Alan so George could find a job somewhere. Or worse yet, George might discover her affair. To avoid those and other unpleasant prospects, she filed for divorce. A year later, she married Alan. Do women marry men for their money? Humorous anecdotes abound on women who marry men for their money, but my counseling experience has taught me not to treat this tendency as a joke. In truth, a woman does marry a man for his money. At least, she wants him to earn enough money to support himself. I can recall talking to a woman who had a problem very similar to Sandra's. Her own marriage was intensely unhappy due to her husband's low income, but she insisted she would never stoop to divorce to resolve the problem. "George is loyal and affectionate. I'd never be so selfish and uncaring as to leave him just because he doesn't make enough money." "Oh," I replied, "do you always feel that way?" "Of course I do. Leaving a man who doesn't make enough money is a low-down, selfish thing to do." Alice seemed to know her mind and convinced me that she would stick it out. 2 weeks later, she missed her appointment with me because she had filed for divorce and felt too ashamed to tell me about it. After the divorce was finalized, she married a man who earned considerably more money than her former husband. Why did Alice make such loud protests against stooping to divorce when in the end she did not really have that strong commitment to marriage? Actually, she didn't exhibit very unusual behavior. Often I counsel people who become what I call verbally rigid just before they crack. I believe Alice's inconsistent actions resulted from a struggle deep within her, between her values and her need for financial support. The incredibly powerful need to have enough money won over all her commitment and good intentions.